Okay, so first thing is our IP notes. Anyone can participate in these calls. It's open to the public. However, if you're not a member of the group and have not yet agreed to the group's IP policy, we can't consider substantive contributions. So keep that in mind. Let's make sure we got everyone's connections and pick a scribe. Kim, are you on? Doesn't look like Kim's on. Chris, do you know how to deal with these connections? I saw Ryan just pulled something up.
I'm trying to figure it out now.
Void CCG connections is what Ryan did. There we go. So we've got one from 415.
Is somebody calling from 415?
Darla, okay. I don't know how to attach them to that, given that it's the broad number. Okay, very good. Dave, you're ahead of the game. I appreciate that. And then we also had an unknown coming in over the dial-in 048. I don't know how we figure who that is. And then we also have someone from 919.
That would be David Challoner, DCC.
Great. Thank you, David. That's 5048. David. What was the last name, David? Oh, we got it.
Challoner.
Okay. All right, Dave. I'll let you keep taking care of that. I'm not sure how many more we have. And let me see if we can't get someone to strive for us. Anyone want to volunteer? As I start heading down the list. So the list starts with Adrian Gropper. Benjamin Young. Bob Dolan. Bodan Andreev.
Christian Lundquist. Yes, thank you.
Oh, Bodan, would you like to scribe for us this week?
Oh, no. I will not manage. I'm sorry.
Okay, I can appreciate that given our conversations about your challenges with English. So, no worries. Okay, Dan Burnett?
I just scribed my last call just before this one, so I prefer not to this week.
I appreciate that, Dan. Dan Pape. David Len. Drummond Reed. Frederico Sportini. Greg Linklater. Irene Hernandez. Hey, Andrew.
This is torture. I'll try.
All right. You're a good man. We appreciate it, Andrew. There's a method to the madness. Okay. Okay. our agenda today is mostly going to be focused on some more use cases. We do have some announcements, and we'll have a bit of a moment for introductions and reintroductions. We'll talk about some action items, in particular the BPPR hackathon. And then the work items, we want to give Manu a chance to tell us about where we're at with spinning up the DID working group. And then we want to introduce a topic that we're not going to spend a lot of time content-wise on about requirements for DID methods. And this is really just planting a seed. We're sure we don't have them all, and in a future call, we'll dive into this in more depth. And then basically the last half hour of the call, we'll be focusing on three use cases as candidates for focal use cases, Ryan Grant, Thea, Sigmund, and Adrian Grapper all have cases up for discussion today. Any questions or suggestions or additions to the agenda? Okay, do we have anyone new on the call today? So we could introduce you to the rest of the group. Nobody's new? Everyone's an old hand? Okay, well maybe that's accurate. Let's see if we can get someone to reintroduce themselves.
Benjamin.
Go ahead, Benjamin.
Hi all. This is Benjamin Young with John Wiley and Sons. I'm also, as of recently, the co-chair of the upcoming JSON-LD working group.
Excellent. Welcome, Benjamin. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay. If there's no one else, we'll continue on. Okay, so we just have two announcements and reminders of activities going on this summer. The first one, we're going to talk a little bit more, again, in action items, which is the summer, should say BTCR hackathon. It's a typo. We had initially scheduled a generic DID hackathon that was really about outreach to developers, targeting July 16th. But we've got a couple of DID methods that aren't quite ready for prime time, so we want to do something later in the year, and we're still looking at doing that potentially September 29th or 30th. So we'll talk about that in the next section. The other item is my data, so that's in August. I think there are a bunch of panels. Does anyone want to say anything about that? I think that's really just a reminder that that's coming up for those of you who can make it out there.
Yeah, this is Marcus. There's going to be one talk by Kim to introduce DIDs in general, and there will be several other talks that will be somehow related to DIDs and verifiable credentials. There will be an unconference part at that conference where most likely there will be lots of sessions about decentralized identity. And other than that, I think there's still discussions going on whether there will be a separate event or some kind of rebooting Web of Trust related event adjacent to my data, but I don't think that has been finalized yet.
Okay, so I can speak to that. Thank you, Marcus, for bringing that up and giving us the status on the other activities at my data. So we will not be doing the salon on Saturday. We had bounced that idea around with Yogi, but the logistics of it seemed a little bit too much for us. So we are not going to do that. Instead, we're going to support it in a couple of other ways, including talking about it here and promoting to the Rebooting Web of Trust community as well. I think it should be a good conference. So I encourage those of you who can make it out to Helsinki to make the trip. Okay. So current action items. So we just have a couple queued up. If you have an action item you want to report on, feel free to put yourself on the queue. I wanted to talk about the BPPR hackathon and the potential later in the summer or early fall, a wider DID hackathon. Chris, would you like to speak to this a little bit?
Sure. So regarding the July hackathon, again, you know, the agenda was the maturity of the different projects and whatever made it such that the broader sort of outreach hackathon event thing is probably not ready for July. But the BTCR folks wanted to kind of have a week to concentrate and kind of catch up with some of the other implementations as far as getting our the BTCR functioning and some verifiable claims tested. So if you're at all interested in that, you're interested in the various generic things that we're all going to be supporting, we'd love to have your participation in that hackathon. Basically what we do is 9 a.m. Pacific time, 12 noon Eastern time, we do a stand-up call for half an hour or so where everybody sort of says where they're at and what's slowing them down or stopping them, and then we use a Slack channel on rebooting to communicate with each other over the course of the day. And we do that Monday through Friday for that 1 week. Longer term, we still want to do the DID outreach hackathon. We'd love to have everybody from VerisOne, Sovereign, Uport, et cetera, to try to have a week of trying to bring in some new players and walk people through on a daily basis, what we're capable of doing. So the exact timing of that is still to be open. We're talking sometime in like October. That's it. Did I forget anything, Jeff?
Nope, that sounds great to me. Kim, did you want to add anything to that? I see that you just joined us.
Yes, sorry. So did I want to add anything about the DID outreach hackathon?
The BTCR in particular.
Yes. So actually, I was hoping that we could have a bit of a sync up. I noticed Ryan's on the call. Anyone sort of involved with BTCR or interested in it, I wanted to maybe we can coordinate offline or email the mailing list about a sort of planning session for what are some things we can do. I know Ryan and Dan Pape have been working on some interesting, additions to the TXREF encoding and some other things they have been working on with regard to the C++ implementation. So I wanted to just sync up on where we are and what some good outcomes for the hackathon might be. And then that way we can also kind of more cleverly allot tasks to people who are interested in joining.
I will add a key thing that we're needing some help with is on the JSON-LD 1.1 side. So I'd really appreciate it if there's a little bit of time that can be given by the people that are more familiar with the latest JSON-LD. We're needing to, identify what libraries are being updated to JSON-LD 1.1, various things of that nature. So that would really be helpful.
Okay, great. Thanks, both Kim and Chris. I want to also anchor this idea about September 29th and 30th. So I think last week, we may have presented that we were potentially moving the whole hackathon to the 29th and 30th. The reason for that is a couple fold. One is Danny Buchner at Microsoft tweeted that he, now that Microsoft has made a commitment to working with verifiable credentials and did, he want to do some sort of hackathon. And we also really wanted to have something that, that reached out more to all the DID method providers. We've done a couple of these virtual hackathons with BTCR, but we'd love to get folks from Sovereign and Newport, Microsoft, Digital Bazaar, you know, to have a more generic DID advocacy hackathon, potentially in person. So the Rebooting Web of Trust is currently looking for space that week of September 24th. And the idea is we might be doing something with the W3C, which we talked about last week. That's still up in the air. But the idea is we would do a week in Toronto, finishing up with a hackathon for a couple days that would be supported both virtually and live. So if you are behind one of our DID methods, we would love to get your engagement and figure out how we can support a hackathon that gets developers using your DID method. Because I think that's going to be the best way to get people on board and get people to see the breadth of the different options available and the different methods.
Hey, this is Marcus. Is there any chance this could be combined with IIW or do it in a week after that or the week before that so I could attend both events?
Your audio was a little difficult to hear there, Marcus, but it sounded like you were inquiring about coordinating with IIW.
Yeah, so it's roughly at the same time because last time Rebooting Web of Trust, I think, was in March, and then Internet Identity Workshop was in April, so this meant two separate trips. So just wondering if this time perhaps could be combined.
I think the idea was that it was going to be the weekend immediately after Rebooting. You just stay one or two more days at Rebooting.
So we are trying to save some effort with the trip market in that way that Chris just described. The biggest problem with IIW this fall, unfortunately, is that it's the same week as TPAC, which is the W3C Technical Planning Plenary and Advisory Council or Committee or something. And that's really where we're going to be advocating and trying to establish the DID working group. So a lot of the folks on this call won't be able to make it to IIW because of that conflict.
Now, it's Andrew. IIW is late in October. I think, has that been moved? Because it used to be the beginning of October, but I just saw they are now the fourth week of October.
Well, that overlap was based on the dates that were published at the last IIW. Have they changed it since then?
October 22nd now.
Right. Yeah, so that's the same time as TPAC, unfortunately. So that's unfortunate, but both organizations have to make significant commitments, you know, well ahead of the time frame. So it just didn't work out this fall. Okay, any other action items folks want to report in on? I haven't seen anyone add themselves to the queue. So let's move on to work items. And first up, hopefully, Manu, are you with us this week?
No, Manu is traveling, so unless he called in, he will not be here this week.
Okay, bummer. His digital ghost is in the IRC, so I had my hopes up. Um, So we kind of gave the informal update on that, so we'll just skip this. I was hoping to get some more details from Manu, unless there's someone here who wants to speak to that. I think he's got the clearest outlook of what it's going to take to deal with the both the logistical and the political obstacles to getting the working group spun up. Okay. Any other work items folks want to report in on? Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
We're working on for BTCR some new document validation this month. And we are looking for existing test cases and collections of both compliant and non-compliant DID documents.
Okay. It might be useful to send an email to the list asking for some document examples. I'm not sure who the best resource is, and I know that has been a little bit in flux, but I think it's been settling down. Okay. Any other work items? Great. Thanks, Ryan. Oh, we got a couple. Okay, go ahead, Christopher.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to, we needed to do something about Open Creds. So Open Creds is both a website and a GitHub that is was started by this community before Kim, Joe, and I became co-chairs. And like you'll notice that Open Creds minutes refers to meetings that you know are at the wrong time. And I had somebody on Twitter refer to an Open Creds document. So I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, we need to move, you know, either move stuff with into redirects or, you know, delete things. I'm not sure what the right stuff is. And I'm, you know, besides Manu, who else worked on the Open Creds website and such? Dave, did you work on it some?
I was going to say, We've got some people in Digital Bazaar that worked on it to some extent, and you know I've got access to it as well, so we can figure out something where we can do some redirects and get some kind of archive, maybe have an archive to this and redirect people to the newer site.
Yeah, and I do. There was some stuff in there that actually, you know, it may be worth you know moving to the new repo and just simply saying, you know, this is useful, but it's a former work item or something. I don't know. A little bit of evaluation needs to be gone through to kind of say, hey, there's nothing new that is equivalent of this. Anyhow, thanks. That's the end of my thing.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Is that Drummond? No, whoever Big Blue Hat is, you're up.
Benjamin.
Great.
Yeah, no worries. I mentioned earlier about where to put example bid documents. It'd be great if there is a GitHub repo or a wiki or someplace where we can encourage those to land, just someplace for people to easily contribute those, either via issues or whatever means. But so that it's not just a find the person who knows where the thing is. solution.
Okay, I think that's a great idea. Dave?
Yeah, we might want to have a place, and maybe we already have this, where we link to implementations of DID resolvers that might have test suites for this sort of thing. I don't think Dimitri Zagadulin's on the call right now, but he is working on a JavaScript DID resolver. And so there's going to be tests and DIDs and things there. And so maybe if we have links to implementations of libraries that are intended to be used with multiple DID methods, sort of as plugins or drivers, that sort of thing, those would be the sorts of places where you could find test suites to run to validate DID documents and things like that.
Okay, so I do see in the URL that you put in the chat, there is a directory for tests that has DIDs in it. And so you're suggesting that maybe that's a good resource for us to use?
That's one resource, yeah.
Okay, do you think we need a separate resource for those that are explicitly being tested and just those that are more illustrative examples?
I would think that the DID spec would have examples that would hopefully cover, you know, illustrative purposes. And I would think that these sorts of libraries that do implementations of resolving DIDs and things like that would be the good place to have test suites with more rigorous checks and things like that.
Okay, so I'm still, unfortunately, a little bit confused on what might be the action item coming out of this thread, because it sounds like it would be good to have a place for where folks like Ryan can go to find documents, but it looks like we don't quite have that yet. Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, the universal resolver at diff has some built-in examples if you run the front end, and there is a public deployment of that front end at uniresolver.io. I just posted the link. It has examples for several different methods. They are not all very robust, and some of them are experimental, and there's not a lot of checking and validation happening. Some of them may be broken even, but it's another source of examples. If we want to consolidate examples somewhere, I think that would be a good idea. There's the DID spec itself, obviously. There's also a document that Dimitri Zagadulin and I started specifically on DID resolution, which right now is mostly a skeleton or placeholder document, but that could also be a repository in the credentials community group GitHub account, where we could perhaps collect these examples. I will also post a link. So this here, the link I just posted, is the draft, very early first step specification for DID resolution that Dimitri and I were talking about. So maybe that's also a place where we could collect examples.
Okay, great. Thanks, Marcus. Christopher?
Yeah, there's sort of two different things we need. I'd actually say three different things. We need verifiable claims, which maybe there's a test repo or whatever for verifiable claims in the working group community there. We need signed verifiable claims, the kind of the reference verifiable claims, so basically taking the verifiable claims that are appropriate for the verifiable claims group, but signing them in various ways. So like, you know, having one that is signed with RSA, one that's signed with the Bitcoin key, the one that's signed with a timestamp, et cetera, and that's kind of the province of this community group. And then we need various examples of DID document stuff. So I'm not, I'm sort of seeing there are three different or four different areas of examples. I don't know if they all go in different places because, or different repos or whatever. For instance, if we create a DID working group, the repo probably should be moved to the working group of the DID document examples.
Right. Okay, so I think the verifiable claim stuff almost certainly needs to end up over in VCWG land. So I'll table that, although let's note it for those who are also in that working group. We do have some work in the use cases and elsewhere to try and get some of that together. It's just not there yet. I'm thinking we add a web page to our wiki and point to these resources that people have shared in IRC. And just having a list of URLs where there are existing DID documents, I think, is an easy first start to putting together a centralized list of examples. So I'm not sure the best way to do that, but I think that's an action item for the chairs to figure out. Okay. And I think the queue was empty there. All right. So that's work items. So we wanted to introduce we need a formal statement of what is required for a DID method to qualify to be a DID method. There are a few requirements that are buried in the DID spec. So there are clearly some decisions that have already been made, or at least there's been some consensus around. But there are also some possible requirements that we don't think there is consensus. So we want to trigger the conversation so we can figure out what requirements do we have consensus about and which ones should we still kick around a little bit to try and figure out the best way to approach them. So two of them that we know of are revocation and rotation. In other words, does the method need to specify how you do revocation? And in particular, does it need to have revocation, right? The answer to the requirement could be you can't do revocation, and if that's stated in the method, maybe that meets the requirement. Alternatively, we could, as a standards process, say if a DID method doesn't have revocation, then it's not a DID method, or it's an incomplete DID method. So the two distinctions I wanted to get in the conversation at this stage is that revocation is about a key being compromised, right? So this means you can no longer trust the signatures of the key. And so that's kind of problematic in some use cases. I think in the BTCR case, it means you need separate keys for transactional use than you would have for, say, a master key or something like that. Whereas rotation would be updating the transactional keys with new keys, right? So it's sort of general rotation. Chris, could you speak to these two a little bit?
Yeah, so let me make sure my I think the big issue here is that there's been people who have said, gosh, we ought to have, a PGP method, or we want to do this thing that, is only has one key. And will only ever have one key, and thus should be, we're never going to be able to rotate. We're never going to, be revoked, et cetera. And the question is, do we really want to support those as methods? I mean, we can be, you know, anybody can sort of ad hoc, you know, have a method, but does this group want to support these methods that are of a lower standard, and or do we want to, you know, do we want to set a higher requirement? You know, one of my concerns about not setting the higher requirement is that, you know, people submit things that, you know, aren't rotatable, aren't revocable, et cetera, and then we have people from the old identity community, the legacy identity community come to us and say, well, see how bad those practices are, and you're supporting these. You know, I mean, you know, you ought to be supporting the legacy approaches to these. I mean, I think one of the unique things that DIDs and, you know, our ecosystem offer, you know, is that revocation and rotation of keys. So I'm wondering if we need to be more formal as to what a method should support. And there may be other things as well.
Okay, thank you, Chris. So I just wanted to plant the seeds. I'm sure those aren't the only two contentious or open-ended requirements, but we need to catalyze these so we can get conversations forward. I know that the different implementers who have their own chains often have very committed ideas about what they are or are not willing to support. So we want to get those needs into the conversation so we can get to consensus about it. And Drummond, who can't join the voice call, is adding on IRC some of the conversation from Pele from Newport, which is part of what's triggering this. So again, I just want to plant the seed, and we will round the corner with this, and hopefully let me take an action item also to invite comment on the mailing list. So we can maybe get some conversation there. Okay. Do we have anyone on the queue? Whoops. No. Okay. So let's dive into our focal use cases, and I want to time box these to 5 minutes because that's about all we have left. But that should be enough to give the author of the different use cases an opportunity to introduce where they were coming from. I'll drop the link into the chat. And Ryan Grant, you are first on the agenda.
Okay. To talk about the weblog in use case. So the idea here is just use did auth. The use case has a nice link to a rebooting web of trust document that has some did auth architectures, and one of the possible architectures is did auth architecture 6, which is between a web page sent off by a server and the user's web browser, where they authenticate also using their mobile app, which is capable of did auth. And then the document example says there's a did auth response. It doesn't really explain whether this is back over a HTTPS socket to the back to the server for the server to check the signature. I think that's one possibility. I'm aware that Uport also does a direct mutation of their Ethereum blockchain. And then the web server observes the blockchain for the evidence of that auth occurring. anyway, the use case is just saying that now we have these identifiers with key material. We can use these for a single sign-on experience, and it could improve some things. And the sticky widget on that is don't try and store a password. Instead, just ask for proof of control of the DID using, you know, whatever devices are appropriate for the particular experience. And then I also add a couple sentences about, you know, how would you add second factor authentication to this, but that's more of an aside. That's all.
Cool. Thank you, Ryan. Anyone else have something to add before we move on to the next one? Or any questions? Okay. Hearing none. And as we go through, feel free to jump on the queue if you have a question or an item. I guess actually, Kim, you did ask, looking up at the chat history, if they're single use only, maybe revocation is less important?
Yes, I'm just sort of thinking out loud, following up on what Drummond mentioned. So I noticed that he called out the single key, single use, DID aspect, and that's what seems a little more interesting here. And so what I was getting at is, I don't know if there's necessarily a way to, I don't know how it's proposed that the single use occurs. That's probably, you know, implementation specific, but especially if there's sort of a time bound between when it's created and when it's used, I could see that maybe the window for revocation the window of threat is reduced. So that was basically me trying to get more information on the single key, single use DIDs, but it sounds like Drummond can't speak, so maybe we should follow up with that.
Okay, great. Okay, so the next use case then is going to be use case number 11. Sria, are you on the call? Sria's showing up on the chat. If you're trying to talk, you might have mute on, Sria. Okay,
she has a regular conflict. She runs the publishing business group.
Okay. Well, I will walk us through this. This use case actually came out of the verifiable credentials use case conversation. And we realized it wasn't such a great example for verifiable credentials, but it potentially was for DIDs. So the idea is that members of authorized communities, such as university students, who have access to their university library resources, are often, because of their membership in the university, given the subscription resources to various publishers. And so it's relatively trivial to whitelist all this stuff. And the idea is that with DIDs, maybe we can do this a little bit more, I guess, in a federated way. Although federation is kind of a bad word and it's a little overloaded, so maybe that's not the best term. But the idea is that with this single identifier, this DID, you can sign into library resources not only at your own university, but at any university who is a member of the shared resource system. And I think that about sums it up. So we still need to fill in some of these blanks, but that's the basic idea. And I will I'll just give a big verbal thumbs up to the comments about potentially using OCAP for this. Although how DIDs and OCAP work together is still a research project. Do we have Chris? Is Chris Weber on the call?
I'm on the call. Yep.
I wonder if you could speak to that, Chris. Where's the DID OCAP overlap here, and is this a good example that we might highlight that?
Sure, I think it's a good example. I just wasn't chiming in because I was doing some other things, but it's a great example for overlap. So the OCAP LD stuff, you need to have some sort of cryptographic material from which, you know, is basically been authorized to be able to do something, right? So it's perfectly reasonable to think that that cryptographic material could be your student ID, you know, DID or whatever, right? Or just the DID of that student, right? So if you get a capability, so you could envision it like this, your university ends up getting a capability to be able to access this greater library system, and then they end up, you know, attenuating a capability to you, to your DID, basically. They end up delegating a capability to your DID, and then you can invoke that to be able to get access to, you know, whatever material. And, you know, if you end up becoming not a student anymore, then your university can decide to revoke access to your DID. Revoke access to that capability that your DID has. The greater library system doesn't need to worry about it because it's just your university that needs to keep track of who their students are.
Got it. Okay. Well, we would love, as we flesh this out, Chris, I think it'd be great to explore, especially when we get around to, you know, what's an example. You know, how does a capability get attached to a DID? This may be a great place to anchor that in our work.
Sounds great. I'd love to help.
Okay. And DCC, you are on.
Yeah, I just have a couple comments about the last suggestion. It seems to me as though if the University of Arizona has capability to see, pays to see a particular publication, they're not allowed to grant that capability to the University of North Carolina. The University of North Carolina has to buy their own subscription. So I don't really see how this works, but it sure seems as though if the University of Arizona wants to allow University of North Carolina access to the books they have and vice versa, that it would be much easier for them to just say, okay, we will allow keys signed by the University of North Carolina to access to our library. And that makes it so much easier. I just don't understand why you do this much more complicated procedure than what you already have. So I don't think this use case works.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I can tell you one of the things that we were kicking around, I don't think it addresses your fundamental question. It was about the individual being able to log into that resource, whether they're on campus or not. But that's not interesting now.
Yeah, that seems like simply I've got a key that allows me to get in, and I log in. Or I do a VPN into the university and then use the library. I'm at Johns Hopkins, and that's what I do if I want to take a look at a document. I VPN into their system, and then I can download it and look at it. I don't think you can extend a license to somebody else, so I don't think the use case works.
So I wish Svea were here. I can't speak to your point. I think it's a good point, a good criticism. Svea works for Wiley, so
yeah.
She's pretty familiar with the business model around that, and obviously the fact that you can't just, you know, re-license your your subscriptions like that, I'm sure was part of her thinking about it. So I think we're, I think it's more likely we're missing in the description what Fia was thinking made sense here. But I appreciate that feedback.
Well, beyond that, suppose I belong to two universities. Some universities have joint programs. How does, like, University of North Carolina and NC State have a joint biomedical engineering program? So if you leave UNC but not NC State, you don't want UNC saying you no longer have access to these journals because you're still with NC State, and NC State has access to them. So it seems to me as though it's so much easier for you to just say each library saying, I accept these things. And if you have one of them, then you get in. This doesn't sound like a good use case.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that feedback, and I don't want to spend too much more time in debate because I have one more to go over with, but I think that's
fine.
All fair criticism.
Can I just say one thing super fast, that there is a way to be able to handle the delegation when you were not supposed to delegate thing, and there, if you want to go out, if you want to try to enforce that type of thing, there is a concept called split contracts, and it's compatible with the systems we're building.
You're up, Drummond. I'm sorry, that's Ben.
Benjamin. No worries. Yeah, I work with Tfia directly. She's actually my boss. And we work together with the RA21 working group, which is Resource Access in the 21st Century. They're looking at things to get around exactly that VPN situation that you described, because right now it's essentially pretty naive IP address-based things, which are pretty spoofable. And one researcher can give away said VPN access to the Sci-Hubs of the world and consequently get access to all the things regardless of license. Our preference would be something much more like a verifiable credential and decentralized identifier-based system. And we'd love to work out the details of what's needed to actually make that happen with capabilities or whatever, but we see the IP address thing as just a big hole in the actual process and full of risk and provable damage to lots of different organizations. So this is an opportunity to improve that. So I would hate to see us walk away from a valuable use case for this technology.
Agreed. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. So I'll work with Sophia to fill in the details, and I believe it's David. We'll take your comments into account and try and illustrate more clearly what's going on here. I want to ask, Adrian, since we're down to the last bit of time, are you going to be on the call next week? Could we talk about your use case next Tuesday? Well, I'm not hearing Adrian. You may still be on mute, Adrian. In any case, we really don't have time, and I do think the prescription use case is rich and has a lot of depth. So I want to make sure we give it enough time to bounce it around and to have some conversation with the group. So we will table that. We'll probably get to it next week. We'll just need to make sure that Adrian can make it.